three torches. And I'm going, that's extreme fire behavior.
The first wildfire of the season puts limited Northern Lynn Canal resources to the test. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more up next. A wildfire destroyed 1.5 acres of forest on the Chilkat Peninsula Thursday, but caused no injuries. Northern Lynn Canal forester Greg Palmieri says it was one of the worst wildfire season openers in memory.
It's big. It's unusual for this time of year. Usually this time of year we catch them even if they're remote, and they typically don't get this big.
The blaze was reported Thursday morning by a phone call from Glacier Point. And by noon, three Haines emergency firefighters, including Palmieri, were in a Coast Guard helicopter on their way to Seduction Point with pumps, hoses, and tools.
And of course, we landed and we're just entering peak burn period for the day, you know, just the beginning of it. I'm looking at the fire activity and we're getting the pump set up and, you know, the first tree torches. And I'm going, that's extreme fire behavior. And we're on the edge of the forest where it's thick and dense at the end of the peninsula, and then it moves uphill rapidly. And so I'm just standing there going, I've got these trees on the edge of the beach torching. If it gets in another 100 feet, you know, look out. You know, obviously conditions are such that this could move rapidly through the canopy and become something much larger than anything I could handle down here with the crew that we have.
Two more firefighters responded soon after by boat with more materials. But Palmieri knew that the state's backup resources were maxed out because of other needs up north, and that the Northern Lynn Canal was on their own for a while.
We definitely could use some help. We are short-handed right now. We're just really on the edge of the statewide response and the resources that are available, and I think they do a great job of helping us out and supporting us when we get into extended project fires. But you know, initial attack is on our shoulders and on the supplies and the gear that we have here.
Temsco sent another helicopter from Skagway, which is equipped with a giant water bucket to help put out the fire.
He made at least a dozen drops on the fire until he went through his fuel load. And then when he went back to refuel at the Haines Airport, I was able to do an assessment of the work that had been done. We had gotten a truck lined up, and his drops were really successful at containing the perimeter. I thought he did a real good job.
In this case, Palmieri's crew was able to attack both sides of the fire by setting up two water pumps while the helicopter fought the part of the blaze that was advancing up the hillside.
The standard format is called the anchor, flank, and pinch. And so the first thing you have to do is establish an anchor point when you're responding to a fire, and that's related to the crew safety specifically. So you find a position that you can defend, and being that we were on the coast, that was relatively easy to do. And of course, that was our water source, which was great. And so all we needed to do was have running pumps and enough fuel to keep them running.
Light winds helped firefighters too. Palmieri says he was thinking about how lucky crews were for the good weather as the flames grew.
Additional torching occurred. There were three additional trees while the helicopter was there suppressing. And so the torching of the trees tells me that we have extreme fire conditions. And that means that the potential for a running fire through the canopy exists. In other words, the conditions are right in the vegetation itself to carry that type of fire. The only component that would have made that occur would have been a steady wind. And fortunately, we couldn't have asked for a better wind condition in this response.
By 4 p.m., the blaze was calmed, and the ground crew finished the day's work by dousing and digging the perimeter of the burn to cool the ground underneath. And that method of continuing to put out a fire even after it isn't visible probably could have kept this one from happening, says Palmieri.
But it appeared to me that there was a campfire several days ago at this location, and that somebody maybe had done that, had simply thought, you know, after they spent the night there and had a fire all night or what have you, that they could just throw water on the fire, and if it looked like it was out, it was out. But what had happened, or potentially could have happened, was they had a hot enough fire in there that the rocks and the material below the surface that they couldn't see readily retained the heat and therefore was able to continue the burning after they left the area.
The Division of Forestry says campfires should not be hot to the touch if they're completely out. Furthermore, stirring ashes with a shovel while pouring water is the best way to extinguish a campfire.
Most people don't believe that they've left their fire pit in a condition that might start a fire. They feel like they've done something and they've done it well and they've put water on it. But I've just seen too many situations.
For information and approval before burning, contact local fire departments at 983-2450 in Skagway and 766-2115 in the Chilkat Valley. There's a ban on open burning in Haines, and Skagway is allowing fires only in department-approved fire rings and within the hydrant district. The most comprehensive Tlingit dictionary known to date hits shelves this week. It's the first resource to include all word categories, like nouns, adverbs, and interjections, all together, and also includes never-before-documented words. But it wouldn't have been possible without the help of some people from the Chilkat Valley.
Our most fluent speakers are in their, 70s and 80s now, and we lose a fluent speaker, every couple months, it seems like now.
Carrie Edwards is a linguist from Haines. She's in Juneau now, where she's spent the last 6 years compiling this dictionary. Along the way, she's had the help of a list of Tlingit-speaking elders.
For the verbs, I had regular weekly meetings with fluent elders here in Juneau. And we'd get together, and I'd have a certain list of verbs I wanted to collect for the day. And I would gather three forms of each verb and entered into the database, and then we would take these words, the individual verbs or nouns, and send them to a couple different elders. They would come up with example sentences for these words. And then from these example sentences, they would write them out, and then I'd go over them with another group of fluent elders, and we would edit them for spelling and grammar and translate them.
For a native language that's been around since ancient times, but has seen a dramatic decline in recent generations, it's a big first.
We're really getting low on the numbers of fluent speakers that are going to be around to pass on the language in the natural way that we all learned our first languages. So this just is a way to at least document the language the best we can before our fluent speakers are gone. I think that it's really an important thing, especially for people of Tlingit heritage, to have that opportunity to, if they want, to study their ancestral language and learn about how their ancestors spoke.
The dictionary also used established resources like 1960s-era electronic files. There will also soon be a CD version of the book with some familiar voices on it.
David Kastick from Klukwan, so he helped us by providing some example sentences, and he also will be heard on the online resource. He's one of the voices that's pronouncing a lot of the entries for us.
Speakers of the language say Tlingit has traditionally been passed down orally, so serious documentation didn't really get going until recent decades. Since then, plenty of Tlingit dictionaries and guides have been added to the growing library, but it seems none is all-encompassing as this one.
What this dictionary contributes that others haven't done so far is it has all of the major word classes together in one resource. Also, Tlingit verbs are pretty unpredictable in a lot of respects, and there's certain information that you need to know in order to conjugate the Tlingit verb. So that kind of information has never been documented for.
The Dictionary of Tlingit, released by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute this week, is not alone. The Institute also published the Dictionary of Tsimshian and Dictionary of Alaskan Haida, with over 5,500 entries. Rosita Worrell is the Institute's president.
Well, we've been working on language restoration for nearly 10, 12 years, and I would say that for a greater part of this, we've been working on these dictionaries. So they're pretty broad in scope, and to have three of them released all at the same time, I think is fairly significant.
Edwards, compiler of the Tlingit Dictionary, has a master's degree in linguistics from the University of Oregon. After finishing her graduate work, she moved back to Alaska and volunteered with the Institute to become more familiar with Tlingit.
I knew about Dick and Nora Dauenhauer, who have done a lot of work documenting the language, and so I was really hoping to get to know them and learn from them.
The stint turned into a job where, over the last few years, she's been documenting the Tlingit language through several different projects.
Like this dictionary that just got published and a verb database. I've also been working on a transcription project where I take old recordings of the language and transcribe it in Tlingit and then work with elders to translate it into English.
The word and picture dictionary is designed for beginners and advanced speakers alike, but Edward says because of the complexity of the Tlingit verb system, it'll be mostly useful to speakers with some experience.
But there is an introduction, and I hope people will read that because I've really tried to outline a grammar of the language so that people can use the dictionary more fully. And I've tried to make it understandable to most people and keep the technical language to a minimum.
Edward says the dictionary is relevant to people who speak the varied dialects among area villages.
It mostly comes down to just a very slight difference in, I guess we'd call it accent in English. Maybe the vowels tend to be a little longer up in Kwekwan than here in Juneau. But it's pretty minimal between that region. Where it starts to get more different is down in the south.
The books are now available at sealaskaheritageinstitute.org. But President Rosita Worrell hopes to see the books in more places soon.
We know that it's going to have a lot of use, not only in the classroom, but by people who are just interested in learning a little bit more about our culture.
Marcia Hotch, who studies the Tlingit language in Kwekwan, where she lives, says the dictionary is thoroughly researched and well put together. But she added that documented language needs breath to come alive, meaning unless people learn and use the written words, those words will just be symbols on paper. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.